Hi, it's Tracy. Before we start, I have a request. Okay, it's a little weird, maybe even a lot weird, but hello, 6.5 million downloads on my podcast, and still we haven't chosen a sponsor, right? Yeah, they just haven't been good enough for us, and that's a little weird too. So I decided I'm going to treat this like a sponsorship spot. Many of you know Marcus, my son, who's been the inspiration behind this podcast, the book, my programs, anything at all to do with ADHD. Well, he is graduating from NYU this May, and boy, are we happy that he did it in 4 years. So anyway, Marcus loves to travel, and so he's spending 6 weeks by himself traveling to 5 countries in South America. I don't know about you, but there's no way in hell that I would go to even one country alone. And so we gave Marcus a very low budget. This trip is a combination of his birthday and graduation gift, and he figured it all out himself. He speaks some Spanish, but he hired a Spanish tutor from Ecuador a couple weeks ago, months maybe, who's a professor at a university there, and this professor is helping him with his conversational Spanish. Marcus also changed his phone to Spanish only and all of his apps, and he only watches Spanish TV in preparation for this trip. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what Marcus is like. Now, Marcus would ultimately like to earn a PhD in psychology. He's fascinated by the brain, learning differences, and particularly how dyslexia impacts math. For the near future, though, he wants to work for a couple of years in New York City. I never thought he'd say that. He was always looking for more nature. So anyway, he's going on this trip, and what he's trying to do is find a job that he can come back to. He's come very close, but still no cigar. So yes, I am hawking my son's skills on these airwaves. He thinks I'm insane. But I'm like, who knows what interesting people are out there? I mean, I found my husband in a personal ad when no one was doing that. So why not find a job using my podcast? I mean, ultimately, finding a partner or finding a job, it's all the same thing, right? It's marketing, just getting the word out. Right job, right person. So that's my weird request. If you have any leads in New York City, Marcus would love to work in advertising or marketing sales. He's a phenomenal researcher. I promise you, he can find anything. He's very skilled in Excel and financial modeling. He'd be amazing in digital advertising or tech marketing. And beyond his hard skills, he's resilient. He's so smart. And he has an exceptional work ethic. And that's not just his mother talking. He's not like me. He prefers not to challenge the status quo all the time. He actually likes structure and systems. And he has so many ideas about how to make things better, faster, more efficient, simpler. So I'm putting this out there to our incredible community. If you know of any opportunities in digital advertising, tech marketing, or sales that are in New York City and could benefit from a bright, hardworking, and respectful young professional like my son Marcus, send me an email at support@tracyoutsuka.com and I will connect the two of you. Look, Marcus represents the very essence of what we talk about here every week, right? The brilliance of thinking differently. And so does his mother. So thank you for letting me be weird. And now let's get on with the show. What do you think the key to living successfully with ADHD is?
For me, it's recognizing when it's time to leave a thought, because the negativity can really start to take hold. And it's okay. You're human. It's a normal feeling for that to happen. But to recognize, okay, this is the limit that I'm going to allow myself, and I'm going to allow myself to feel this. But once I feel it, I'm going to start trying to move on from that.
Thomas Edison, Richard Branson, John F. Kennedy, Mozart, Michael Jordan, Will Smith. That sounds like a list of highly successful titans in a variety of vocations.
Why is it that we rarely hear that they have or had ADHD? And you know what we hear even less about? Serena Williams, Emma Watson, Mel Robbins, Whoopi Goldberg, Agatha Christie, Erin Brockovich, Cher. Yeah, the successful women navigating ADHD. And that's exactly why I started this podcast, ADHD for Smartass Women. I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka. I'm a lawyer, not a doctor, a lifelong student, now a coach. I'm also the creator of Your ADHD Brain is A-OK, a system that helps people like you figure out what they should do with their life. And we're here today to talk ADHD, your strengths, your symptoms, your workarounds, and how you proudly stand out instead of trying to fit in. I credit my ADHD for some of my greatest gifts. And you know what? I spy a happier life for you, too. So without further ado, a shiny new episode is starting now. Hello, I am your host, Tracy Otsuka. Thank you so much for joining me here for episode number 215 of ADHD for Smartass Women. I hope that you'll subscribe to this podcast and our newsletter over at TracyOtsuka.com. You know, my purpose is always to show you who you are and then inspire you to be it. And in the thousands of ADHD women that I've had the privilege of meeting, I've never met a one that wasn't truly brilliant at something, not one. And that is exactly why I am delighted to invite Amanda Feliciano. Did I pronounce your name right, Amanda?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, to join us. But before that, I want to give you a little backstory. So for our 200th episode of this podcast back in, I think it was November, I interviewed my family, which was so much fun once we got past all the tech issues. And I can't remember what led to this, probably something about imposter complex. But at the end of the podcast, I said that I would love to interview someone who's been listening for a while and thinks, our guests are so accomplished and so successful, and I'm not that, but I would love to come on the podcast. I personally know, having interviewed hundreds of ADHD women at this point, that regardless of how much we've done in our life, you know, we still think we haven't done anything. So I challenge our listeners to raise their hand because every listener resonates differently with every guest. And we can learn so much from each other, regardless of our age or where we happen to be in life. So that's when Amanda reached out to me. And oh my God, Amanda, I forgot to ask you. So am I allowed to read your email?
Oh yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So that's when Amanda reached out to me and wrote this. My name is Amanda Feliciano. I am 32 years old. She's a baby and was recently diagnosed with ADHD in July of this year. The moment I left my therapy session, I immediately went on Spotify to see what ADHD podcasts were out there. And you were at the top of the list. I listened, I laughed, I cried, and became totally immersed in all of your episodes. But most of all, I was seen for the very first time. I was able to listen to you and your guest stories and relate in ways I never could with others. For months now, I've been dreaming about being a guest on your podcast, but being the true ADHDer that I am, I never felt like I was quite qualified to be an interviewee. Cue the imposter syndrome. I had only just learned about my diagnoses. I'm only at the very early stages of building the life and career that I want. And what could I possibly contribute? But when I listened to your 200th episode, which I loved and congratulations, and at the end, when you said to get out of your comfort zone and email you, I immediately listened. Because you know what? We are all on different life paths and journeys. My story of life with ADHD is valid and credible, regardless of how acclaimed I am, how long I've known about my diagnoses, or any other reason that could hold me back. Thank you so much for all you do. I hope to hear back from you and be a potential interviewee on your podcast. So, wasn't that the best thing you've ever heard? Yeah, I thought so. So let me formally introduce Amanda Feliciano. Amanda is a customer service representative by day and the co-founder and president of Full Circle Theater Collective by night. With her ADHD best friend, Amanda, you're so lucky to have an ADHD best friend. With her ADHD best friend, Wes Laga, she founded the theater company in 2020 while they were organizing Zoom play readings with their friends. In late 2021, they put their first show up as a theater company and brought on their other ADHD bestie, Nicole Boscarino. In 2022, they successfully ran their very first fundraiser and are now setting their sights on projects for 2023. When Amanda is not hypertexting Wes and Nicole about their theater company, she can be found screaming her lungs out at a 90s cover band concert, spending time with her boyfriend Juan, and hosting Broadway karaoke nights in her living room for friends. Welcome, Amanda. And did I get all of that right?
Yes, you did.
I love your story. And I love that you got out of your comfort zone and you did what you really wanted to do. And it's interesting how it almost always works out, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does. When I had sent it, I was like, all right, let's see how it goes. I may not hear anything. And then I think I was in the middle of my lunch break and I was like, oh my God, I got a text from Tracy. So I was very excited.
Well, I'm more excited to have you here. And so before we talk about the theater company and all the stuff that you're doing, I would love to talk about your ADHD diagnosis first, if that's okay.
Sure.
Can you tell us what the circumstances were around your diagnosis? Like, what happened?
So actually, it kind of started when I was 10 years old. I was tested back then, but they ended up telling my parents, you know, it seems like she does have some traits, but we think it's more immaturity that's making her daydream and not pay attention and all that kind of stuff. And then fast forward 2 decades later, and I still have that tendency, that immaturity, that daydreamy, flighty type of personality. But I also have generalized anxiety, and I started noticing that when I was getting my period, I was becoming more anxious, and it started leading to like depression and ruminating thoughts. And I went to my gynecologist and started telling her all this, which is how PMDD came onto my radar. And that was kind of the beginning of it all. She gave me birth control to go on to kind of regulate my hormones, and that seemed to work. And I was with a therapist at that time, and I was telling him, you know, this is the medication that she put me on, and it's just going to regulate my hormones a bit and stuff like that. To which he was like, all right, I think now may be a good time, because ADHD had been brought up a few times in our sessions, and he figured now ADHD would really be the time to kind of start bringing it into our therapy sessions. And that's how I ended up getting diagnosed.
So how old were you by then?
I had just turned 32. So this was, Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so wait a second. So you're 10 years old, you're kind of bouncing off the walls, or are you bouncing off the walls? I think you said you were more kind of daydreamy, not paying attention. Which one?
Yeah, I was more daydreamy, not paying attention, but that was at school. In other circumstances, I was bouncing off the walls and everything like that.
Okay, so you're 10 years old, you know, your parents are seeing signs of what? Were they thinking she might have ADHD, or they didn't know what it was?
I don't think they knew what it was. I think it was a teacher that brought that to their attention.
Okay. So you go to get tested, and the doctors tell you, no, it's not ADHD. She's just immature, which is so insane, right? Because we know that the ADHD brain can be, I think it's up to 6 years behind in development. So that would kind of make sense, right? That maybe you were a little immature. But they said, no, it's not ADHD. And then are you saying that the anxiety started to happen around puberty?
It started to happen. So I think I always had anxiety. It started to peak in my late teens, and it just kind of went overboard when I was hitting my 30s. And so that was kind of the start of me trying to figure out, you know, what I can do to regulate it. Cause I had only felt like myself maybe once a week during the month, and that was it. So I wanted to start exploring why that was starting to happen for me.
Okay. So the PMDD, was that diagnosed at puberty, or was that also diagnosed in your 30s?
No, that was also diagnosed in my 30s.
Wow. Okay. So we do know that there's a correlation between PMDD and premenstrual, what is it? Premenstrual something dysphoria.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact.
I'm going to look it up. It is premenstrual dysphoric disorder. Can you describe what that is? Is it just really heavy periods? Is there a lot of pain during certain times of the month?
So for me, it wasn't so much experiencing menstrual cramps or anything like that. That would happen. For me, it was anxiety would heighten tenfold. Okay. And I would be very short with people. The negative self-talk started to come into play more. It was very hard for me to kind of like find positives throughout my day.
That's right. I completely forgot about the emotion component, which is probably the biggest component of PMDD, right?
Yeah, that hit me very hard. And I've experienced bouts of anxiety and depression before, but it had never been to the severity level. Like I wasn't having thoughts of any suicidal thoughts or anything like that, but it was more just like I couldn't find the purpose in anything really. And so I was starting a lot of arguments with my boyfriend. I was like becoming later and later to my job because I was just like having a very hard time getting up and getting going.
So you were diagnosed with PMDD in your early 30s, but as a teenager, you know, once you, you know, reached puberty, did mm-hmm. you notice that you were starting to get these symptoms? But they showed up as anxiety. It's me again, Tracy. You know how people often assume that if you have ADHD, you're just lazy, unmotivated, and not living up to your full potential? Well, I'm here to tell you they've got it all wrong, except for the part about not reaching your full potential. But that's only because you haven't found the right strategies tailored for your unique ADHD brain. And that's exactly why I wrote ADHD for Smartass Women. This book, it's designed to help you understand the different approaches that work for your distinct brain, inspiring you to become the best version of yourself right now. You can grab a copy wherever books are sold. And if you've already read my book, please take a moment to leave a review on Amazon and Goodreads. Your feedback, it not only supports me and my publisher, but it also helps other smart-ass women and their kids, friends, and colleagues find the strategies they need to thrive. Every review makes a huge difference. So go write a review now or buy the book now before you forget. Okay, back to our usual programming.
They probably did. I can't think of specific moments in my teen years where it had hit me most, but I want to say it probably like started to become noticeable to me in college. And like it would happen there too. Like I wouldn't go to classes, and I would have a lot more anxiety. And I thought it was just, you know, certain things that were happening at the time. You know, I was going through a breakup in college, and, you know, I was a theater major, so I was performing day and night. And so I thought maybe it was exhaustion. I thought it was all these different factors. And I never thought at that age to kind of look internally and be like, all right, maybe there's something else here. Mm. But
and what we do know is that PMDD is also one of the comorbidities of ADHD. So we see it a lot more in ADHD women. So when exactly were you diagnosed with anxiety?
That came a year before my ADHD diagnosis. I had experienced some trauma within my family, and from that, my anxiety heightened. That's when I had started seeing my therapist, and that's when the diagnosis came into play as well.
So you lived through 3 decades just sort of managing, not really knowing what exactly was going on with you, not always feeling like yourself. In fact, it sounds like you often did not feel like yourself.
Yeah, I always felt a little different. And I wasn't exactly sure where to put my finger on it, but I would see these differences. And I was always kind of a late bloomer when it came to certain things that like my friends were doing that I wasn't doing yet. So it just put me at a different stance than everyone else. And while I was able to make connections and have true friendships and relationships, there was always something that just made me feel slightly off, I guess.
Okay. And you just attributed that to, I don't know, I guess I would think, okay, you're a theater major, right? And so, you know, the reason you're really good at that is, you know, we tend to be more dramatic and you probably right. have friends that are, you know, a little bit similar to your personality. And so you just thought, oh, it's just the way I am.
Yeah, I definitely knew that I was dramatic, especially as a teenager. And, you know, I was like, well, I guess that's just my personality. I'm just this, like, hyperactive person that loves to sing and dance. And theater is where I did kind of find my home, just because it was the first thing I ever recognized that I was good at. You know, I wasn't yeah. necessarily good in school. You know, I went to an elementary school. I went to a Catholic elementary school, and I was new around the 3rd grade. And I was I've always been terrible at math. And so we had what was called a trailer, and a woman would come, and it was maybe like 5 or 6 of us, and we would go to the trailer, and she would kind of teach us math in a different way to make it a little more enjoyable, a little more fun, which was great to have that. But at the same time, it still made me stand out, you know? She would come at the start of when everyone was going to do math, and then we would have to be brought out to the trailer. So all the kids were watching us get up and leave. And it definitely took a toll. I definitely went a long time thinking, like, I guess I'm not smart. But I think it was around 19 years old where I did kind of recognize, like, oh, I'm intelligent. Like, I have a different type of intelligence, and that's okay. But yeah, I was able to find what I was good at from an early age that I am very grateful for.
Isn't it crazy too that, because I think a lot of kids feel this way. If you're not good at math and science, that means you're not smart. And it doesn't matter that you're really good at all the other subjects.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it goes to show what school's kind of preference over other things. And that's the disappointing part, is that, well, sure, they give you school plays and a choir and stuff like that. They don't really give you solid opportunities to be like, well, this is where you shine. Yeah. And it's always either academic or sports related. And yeah. So it was hard to find my place because I was terrible at sports. So I knew that wasn't going to be it for me.
So once you knew it was ADHD and you had the benefit of that hindsight, what are some of the symptoms that you always wondered about, but now you recognize that, oh my gosh, of course that was ADHD?
I am terrible with short-term memory. I can tell you what you and I were wearing last April and what the weather was like and everything like that. But if you ask me to repeat something back to you that you just said, I will not be able to remember that. I think that was one of the biggest things. And that for me was like, I felt bad because I tend to just drift off sometimes. And when people are talking, I end up being like, oh crap, what are we even talking about? Where is this going? That to me, I think, has been my biggest issue. And especially in my mid later 20s, I became an acting teacher for an acting school, and that was like a part-time thing that I did. And these kids would be talking to me, and they would just go on, and I would doze off, and I'd be like, wait, I'm sorry, can you repeat the last thing you said? Because I didn't want to admit that I wasn't paying attention to them, so I tried to like see if I could string it together.
Well, and the problem with that, right, is we're like, we can string it together. And so we keep going, thinking that if they keep talking, we're going to be able to string it together. And then we're yeah. so far afield. And then it's really embarrassing, right? To say, oh my gosh, I have no idea what you just spent 5 minutes talking about.
Exactly. And I was like, that especially, like if I have, especially like younger kids and I'm supposed to be the leader of the group for them, I'm like, oh, I really need to focus and buckle down. But because I don't want them to think that I'm not caring or I'm not paying attention to them. It's just like you need to tell me things sweet and short and I'll be able to answer right away. But after, you know, and meanwhile, I can go on and on and on.
I know. It's the dichotomy, isn't it? You know, I was just telling my, we just started a new cohort of Your ADHD Brain is A-OK. And I was just telling my women that one of the most important things that we can learn how to do for our brain, and we can instruct other people to do it, but we need to do it for other people as well, is when we have, you know, a question. So let's say you're writing an email or you're even starting out explaining, you know, you need something from someone. The best thing you can do is give me one short sentence at the very beginning of what it is that you want, right? And then follow up with all of the details, because we will get lost if you just, and I mean, even neurotypicals will. I mean, this is better for everyone, mm-hmm. but especially for our brains that can drift when we're bored and we're not able, we make really good connections. But when it's the boring and he said, and she said, and blah, like, I'm like, I don't know who said, he said, what said, you know, it's,
right.
it's terrible. So if you can give me, you know, I need you to go to the store and pick up bread instead of, and do that at the very top. And then you can tell me the details of what so-and-so said and why you need the bread and blah, blah, blah. And then I have no problem at all, you know, staying in the conversation.
Right. Exactly. And I think that I didn't have that figured out yet. Especially when I was teaching the kids. And now I am able to kind of be like, okay, tell me the big picture first and yes. then explain everything else around it.
So, Amanda, what has changed since you were diagnosed?
I think I'm a little bit kinder to myself, where I used to get really frustrated and annoyed at, like, why did I do it this way? Or why did that come out of my mouth? I'm a little more forgiving. And I also try to keep in my head that that person has probably already forgotten whatever ridiculous thing I just said. And I can, and it's just me that's playing it over and over. But I think it's moments like that where I can just be like, you know what? This is a part of who you are, and people are either going to jive with it or they're not. And the people that aren't going to, then they're not the people for you. And I think that I've been very lucky with the people that I have in my life and their understanding. And I mean, my two best friends that I run Full Circle with also have ADHD. So we're able to kind of pick up where the other one gets lost, which is extremely nice to have, especially in friends and in business partners.
So what are the gifts that you see that you've been bestowed by your ADHD?
I think I am able to be a little more empathetic. It's funny because I always kind of attribute that to acting and being able to like jump in another person's shoes and, you know, that way. But I think it's a combination, because I think ADHD is what gave me my interest in acting and in theater, because I already had that empathy. And I just found a place where it was acceptable for me to apply it.
So when you say empathy, what are you talking about specifically?
I am a very emotional person. It is easy for me to relate and empathize and forgive people and what they do say, what they think, how they feel. And it's made it easier for me to kind of see that while, you know, my neurodivergencies may be different from other people's or from people that don't have a neurodivergency, that we can all kind of come together on some type of ground level to understand one another, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So I'm curious, how does empathy help you in being a better actor?
It's helped me by being able to take away myself, because I may not be able to have the same experiences of a character that I'm playing or I need to portray. But I can kind of create a backstory as to why a person would do something that I necessarily wouldn't do. And it helps me create a character a little more in depth.
So are you saying that you can create this character despite the fact that you may not have experienced what that character experienced, but your empathy allows you to relate to what they've experienced, even though you haven't?
Yes. And I mean, that is a part of what my training with acting has been able to help me with, is even if you don't have the same experience or you don't react the same way, there's at least one thing in your life that you can kind of be like, oh, well, I experienced grief in this way. And then you can understand where that character's grief is coming from, if that's, you know, the emotion that they're feeling.
And so you apply the grief that you know to their experience to make it more believable.
Yes.
Okay. I never really actually thought about that and ADHD. So I think that's interesting. So I would love to know, what made you start your theater company?
It was kind of a combination of things. I always wanted to start one, and I never really had the, I guess the time, and I was also younger. Like, sometimes I do wish I was like, you know, I started thinking about this in my 20s. I wish I would have done it then, but I think I needed a little more experience, and I needed the right people in my life, not just to help me put together this theater company, but to also have the support in the background, which I do now have. And so it started in 2020 when the world had kind of shut down and we were all bored and we couldn't visit each other. And my friend Wes and I were like, well, I see a lot of theater companies are doing online Zoom readings. And we were like, why don't we get our friends to do it with us? And so it kind of just started as a thing that was fun and passed the time on a Friday night when we couldn't go out. And then it became a monthly thing where we did at least one a month. And then Wes and I started toying with the idea of, you know, why don't we create this? And so we did. We actually, the first show that we put on in 2021, we had a Zoom reading for, which was really cool because he ended up getting in touch with the playwright and we recorded it for him and he had sent it to the cast and everything like that. It was called It's a Disaster and it was a movie. So he sent it to, and I think David Cross, Julia Stiles, and America Ferrera were in it. And I'm a huge Julia Stiles and America Ferrera fan. And he had emailed Wes saying like, oh, I passed your recording along to them. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I don't know if they ever had the opportunity to watch it or if they wanted to. But if they got bored enough during 2020, I like to think that America Ferrera and Julia Stiles watched me perform in a Zoom reading. And so we finally brought it to a stage in 2021, and that came with its own stresses because there were new regulations for how to go about putting on a performance because 2020 was still in full swing. COVID was still in full swing. And so, yeah, it was a very exhausting time, which is how we ended up being like, I think we need a third person. Like, and Nicole, who's the other partner with us, she was also in the show and we brought her on. And yeah, we've had a pretty good success. We had a cabaret fundraiser go up in November. And actually, Tracy, I do need to tell you this because I just was like, oh, wow, if this doesn't hold true to my ADHD. But so I was, Grace had sent me the calendar of availability and I saw November 18th, but I saw it too late. And that was the day of the cabaret. And I was like, oh, that would be perfect. I took the day off from work. I'll be able to do an interview with Tracy. And then at night, I'll be able to do the fundraiser. And by the time I had answered Grace, it was too late. And that day had already been taken up. And I am so grateful that it did. Because I still was making the night before centerpieces. One of them broke, so I needed to go back to Staples the next day. Then I needed to pick up lollipops that my mom had made for the show and tie 100 of them, get myself ready. And I was like, how I thought I could have squeezed an interview in that day was beyond me. So I was very grateful that it had been taken.
Wonderful. So you had this idea that I want to start a theater company, and now you have a theater company. I'm curious, is it everything that you thought it would be? I'd love to know, and I'm asking a bunch of questions, which I shouldn't be doing, but I will. What are the things that it's exactly what you expected? And what are the things that, oh my gosh, I had no idea about this?
In terms of like being able to do this with my friends and being able to choose the shows that we want to do, as long as it's in our budget and stuff like that, that has all been awesome. The thing that is complicated for the three of us is we are all artists. None of us are business people. So when it comes to that, which we are trying to start now forming a board, so that way we can have a little more help and we're not running, you know, the entire thing. But in terms of, you know, legal advice and what we need to sign and what we don't need to sign and everything like that, that has been, I think, the hardest part, where we're all like, and like, there was a point where we kept on putting it off and putting it off because the three of us have ADHD and none of us know how to do it. And it's overwhelming us that we don't know how to do it. So, but now we're starting to get our shit together a little bit more. And, you know, that it's hopefully going to sort itself out. And I think we also need to be a little forgiving in our learning process of how we need to go about this.
So, what are the goals? It sounds like you need a neurotypical in there, right? Someone yes. who that's how their brain works, to kind of provide a little bit more structure, maybe.
Yes, absolutely.
Which, you know, we balk about all the time, but we need it more than anybody. So I'm curious, what are your goals for the theater company going forward?
Our goals going forward, we would like to do at least 2 shows a year. On top of our cabaret fundraiser was such a success, I would like to try to make that a more annual type thing. We want to include inclusivity for all people, regardless of age, sex, gender. And we want to be able to put performances on that you may not see. I'd love to have new playwrights come on and hear stories from people that you don't always hear stories from. I think that it's incredibly important and it's so crucial in this day and age to be able to absorb as much as you can and to show people like, we are all human and we need to stand by one another.
Kindness.
Yes.
Yeah, we need more of that. And I'm curious if getting out of your comfort zone and deciding that, okay, I'm going to start this theater company, if that has allowed you to be more comfortable in your like everyday job. Meaning that, you know, people are always like, well, I want to live my purpose, and they think they have to quit, you know, their job. And my comment is always, do not throw the baby out with the bathwater until you are absolutely ready to do that, right? Yes. And so sometimes what your passion is, what your purpose is, it doesn't have to be your regular work. It, you know, it can be something like what it is that you're doing. It can be a side gig for, you know, a period of time until it's ready to not be. And so I'm curious if that's kind of, you know, how you have structured it. So the fact that you've got this theater company makes your everyday work that much better, easier, whatever. Or do you love what you do from a career standpoint as much?
It's funny that you say that, because it's something that I definitely did struggle with in the beginning of like, I would love to eventually make this a career change for myself. It's made me more patient in the job that I have now, because I do have something to go home and look forward to when, you know, we have a Zoom meeting or we're going to a theater location to look at it or something along that nature. But I don't love what I do on the day-to-day. I actually, on top of everything, I am also studying for the Praxis, which is like an SAT to become a teacher. There have been a few opportunities where theater teacher positions have opened. And it's something that I have toyed with over the past few years. And it was always kind of other people telling me, like, oh, you should go out for it, rather than me deciding. And this last time I had been able to make the choice for myself.
And so the praxis is, like you said, it's some sort of standardized test that you have to take in order to become a theater teacher?
Yes.
Okay. So I want to know how you feel right now. You got out of your comfort zone. You reached out and volunteered to do something that was probably a little scary. I'd love to know, are you proud of yourself? Like, what are you thinking?
I am. This is the first podcast I've ever done or recorded or anything like that. And I'm very grateful to you for allowing me to give me the space to open up and talk about my life for a bit. But yeah, I think that I'm going to walk away feeling good and confident about myself. And it also has helped to just kind of say my life story and to kind of normalize it a little bit more.
Okay. So that sounds brilliant, Amanda. And I want to make sure that you remember this feeling, and I want you to reach for it whenever there's something that you really, really want to do for you. So find that feeling, get out of your head, right? Which was, it gives us all those reasons why we shouldn't do something and we shouldn't get into action. And I think a lot of us think, oh, it needs to be a big action, but it can be a little itty bitty action too. I mean, you, I'm sure, could have thought of all the reasons you shouldn't, but you just shut it down and you said, nope, I'm just going to email her right now, right?
Right. Yeah. That was probably, I'm the most impulsive second thinker I know. And that was one time where I was just like, all right, let's act completely on impulse. Let the ADHD happen for you.
Yeah. And I think that for many of us, our impulsivity is ultimately maybe not responsible for our success, but a big part of our success, because we will just kind of jump at the chance and then think about it later. But then there are other times, right, where we're thinking, and then we never get around to the action. And so I just always think it's so important that when we do those things that make us uncomfortable, that we really feel into it once we've done them, and we feel that, you know, oh my gosh, I'm really proud of myself for doing that. That dopamine, right? Because then we can teach ourselves how to spike our own dopamine whenever we're feeling, you know, blah or fearful or just plain negative. So I think this is such a good example. And I'm really, really happy that you reached out. And as I'm sitting here chattering away, I realized that, did I ask you what has changed since you were diagnosed?
I've completely forgotten. I think I said I am a lot less down on myself, and I try to be a little more forgiving of what I do, say, think, feel, and also not just try to be forgiving of it, but try to be a little more mindful as to why I'm thinking that way or why I'm feeling that way.
Do you have this sense now, whereas before the little voice would just chatter away in the head, oh my God, you're so stupid. Why did you say that? You know, why did you do that? You're acting like a spaz, whatever, like that our little, you know, that little brain can just chatter away. And now it's almost like you're looking down on you, and you're kind of the parent of you and protective of you. And so instead of that chattering, it will be other words like, oh, I don't know. You know, your brain says, oh, that wasn't the best thing to say. And your parent voice responds with, yeah, but the reason you said it was X, Y, and Z, and this can happen to anyone, and it's not a big deal, and nobody even cares because they're all worried about themselves. Like, is that what has happened? What has changed?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, the negative talk will still every once in a while find its way in. But I think I'm a little more conscientious of stopping it earlier than letting it sit there and ruminate and make myself miserable for the entire day.
Wonderful. We learn, right, that I don't know, we think initially that the brain is just, it goes off on its own and we have no control over it. And I think what really happens with a diagnosis is you suddenly realize just because you think it doesn't mean it's true.
Right. Like, actually, when I had gotten the diagnosis, it felt more of a relief than a hindrance for me, because then it was like, okay, this is what I have. And now I just need to learn how to control something that I have felt has controlled me for such a long time.
Ah, okay. I love that. And so is part of that focusing less on your weaknesses and spending more time, you know, in your strengths?
Yeah. It also opened me up to realizing, like, even with your weaknesses, it's just because you're new to it. So it's helped me give praise to my strengths, but it's also tried to help me work on my weaknesses.
Do you mean that you're more apt to think of maybe a workaround, a different way to approach that weakness that you want to get done, you know, for you?
Yes. Yeah. That's yes.
Okay. So what do you think the key to living successfully with ADHD is?
For me, I think it's recognizing when it's time to leave a thought, because the negativity can really start to take hold. And it's okay. You're human. It's a normal feeling for that to happen. But to recognize, okay, this is the limit that I'm going to allow myself, and I'm going to allow myself to feel this. But once I feel it, I'm going to start trying to move on from that.
Wow. That is such a skill, because we hyperfocus, right? So we can hyperfocus on the good stuff, which is awesome, but we can also hyperfocus on the bad stuff, which isn't so good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Has your diagnosis helped you with your anxiety?
I think it has, because I think my anxiety and my ADHD have kind of gone hand in hand over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And so ruminating thoughts are something that happens to me a lot. And so I'm able to be aware a bit more, and I'm able to catch when I'm able to catch it quicker.
Do you think your anxiety is because of your ADHD, or do you think that it's comorbid, meaning you have both of them?
I do think that it's comorbid. I think that it kind of meshes together, because I, like, just from my experiences of, like, wanting so badly to act, but, like, my anxiety, it's like there was always a constant tug of war in myself. So I definitely think it's a comorbidity.
But is that a lot better now that you've been diagnosed, where
yes,
you feel like you can act now? So there's still a little bit of anxiety, but you'll do it.
Yes. And it's funny, because with auditioning, with acting, I always felt that way. But I didn't realize, I guess, like, that it kind of goes hand in hand. And so now I kind of think of everything as an audition, where I'm like, I'm not going to do it because I don't think I'm going to be the best one there, and this and that. And then canceling that negative thought to be like, yeah, but what if they really like me? And what if I put myself out there, and, like, I'm already giving myself the answer before I even find out the truth? And so it's funny how I was able to do that for acting, but I wasn't able to do that for other parts of my life. So now I'm trying to include that into my whole entity rather than just my artistic side.
Has medication worked for you, or have you tried it?
I have not tried any medication. It's funny, because the birth control is really the only thing I take, and I really do think that it's helped regulate some of my hormones.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really all that I use.
Okay. So, Amanda, where can people find you if they want to know more about you and what you do?
So, my personal Instagram handle is Amanda_EFF. You can find me if you want to check out Full Circle Theater Collective. Our Instagram handle is The Full Circle Theater Collective. Theater. So, of course, this is where we had our ADHD, like, switch with the group. Theater for the Instagram handle is spelled Theatre. And then if people want to email, that's Full Circle Theater spelled TheaterCollective collective@gmail.com.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it got very confusing. We did not know. that's terrible. We didn't know how to spell our company's name when we were creating these things for ourselves.
Well, so you can spell it both ways, right?
Exactly. So I had created the email. Wes had created the Instagram, and then we were like, "Oh wait."
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, thank you, Amanda. And I am so glad that you got out of your comfort zone and spent time with us here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I've had a great time.
Wonderful. So have I. So that's what I have for you for this week. If you liked this episode with Amanda, please let us know by leaving a review. Our goal is to change the conversation around ADHD, helping as many women as we possibly can learn how their ADHD brains work so that they too may discover their amazing strengths.
You've been listening to the ADHD for Smartass Women podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka, and we're available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Not coincidentally, ADHD for Smartass Women, it's also the name of our free Facebook group. We're a totally smartass community of successful, ambitious women who share our ADHD wins, questions, and workarounds. Join us at TracyOtsuka.com, where you can also find more information on our Your ADHD Brain is A-OK system. I spy a happier life for us, and I'll see you again next week.
Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you here next week. And don't forget to sign up for our free live virtual training, 3 days to fall in love with your ADHD brain, starting on April 15th at spyhappy.me/3days. I'm telling you, it's life-changing.